Welcome to the Listen for Life podcast with Genevieve Richardson. Genevieve is a speech-language pathologist rehabilitating adults with communication challenges after a stroke or due to a neurological impairment. Get equipped with knowledge from experts in the field and professionals you need to know. We'll hear stories and experiences from others who are navigating life with aphasia. So, put your earphones in and take a walk outside. This isn't just a podcast. This is a community, a resource, and a support system. We're in this together. Do life.
Miscommunication happens. If you aren't living alone on an island somewhere, chances are you'll say something that doesn't get received exactly the same way, or somebody else will say something and your instant reaction is to get emotional, to have a response to it. So miscommunication happens, right? And we have to know in general how to correct that, right? To number one, catch it. Number two, acknowledge it. Number three, have some strategies for repairing it. But what if you are interacting with a person who has aphasia? That adds a whole extra layer of complexity to it. So today's episode, we're going to talk about how do we navigate misunderstandings when your person has fluent aphasia, and how do we navigate misunderstandings when your person has non-fluent aphasia. And there's some strategies for each, and we'll give you some background and get you well prepared and on your way to solving these miscommunications as they come up. So let's jump in. So bridging the gap between understanding and empathy, that's what we're going to get into on today's episode. It's the heart of communication, right? Not every sentence lands how we intend it, or maybe we don't receive a sentence as it was intended. But for those who have aphasia, this is a daily frustration. So we're peeling back the layers of fluent and non-fluent aphasia to dig into some of the intricacies behind each word spoken and unspoken. Let's navigate together. We'll give you some insights. I've got some nice examples in this episode to really help illustrate what can be done. So we're going to strive to minimize frustration and maximize understanding. So we're going to start with fluent aphasia. Specifically, in my mind, I'm thinking about Wernicke's aphasia. So let's start with a speech sample. Literally, this is sound for sound, syllable by syllable. Here we go. So the question is, what is this? This is me holding up a picture. And here's the response. Gosh, he has got his rein. Rein cat spot for a par me. Which two swims to sleep? That's three. Three's theirs. There's a stop. I'm sorry, Dory, of cure. It's called for the Amyuk. I think of what's what. Oh, I don't know. That's a sample of fluent aphasia. That's a sample specifically of Wernicke's aphasia. I tried to do it justice. I tried to give it kind of that fluent cadence, if you will. But as you can tell, do you know what I was talking about? What was the subject? What was I trying to get across? So Wernicke's aphasia, just to remind you, is known as a fluent aphasia. It comes from damage to this area. This is the posterior region of the left hemisphere, so it's behind the left hemisphere. Think of it right around the ear area, this temporal lobe. Because one of the hallmark features of Wernicke's aphasia is difficulty listening and understanding what they hear. So if you think about the ear area and difficulty with comprehension, and you match that with fluent speech, then you're most likely talking about a Wernicke's aphasia. So this part of the brain right here by the ear is crucial for understanding and processing language. When someone with Wernicke's is standing in front of you, their presentation is going to be quite distinct. Their speech rate and rhythm often sound very normal, much like speaking in a foreign language. It seems like they have the grammar correct, they have full facial expression and body language. It all seems like you, the listener, should really be understanding what they're saying. But their speech can have words in it that don't make any sense, like they're made up words, or they might choose words that are irrelevant to the situation, whatever it is you asked, or what the context is of that moment. And the response, words can be understandable and relevant, or they cannot be relevant or be made up words. And so for the listener, it's difficult to grasp what is the meaning, what's the intention behind the speech. So this type of aphasia often has trouble listening and understanding both spoken words from others and also being aware, at least in the early days of Wernicke's aphasia, they may not realize they're not saying words right. They may not see the look of confusion on the listener's face and know what to do about it. Either they just can't read somebody's face, or they don't realize they caused it. But whatever the case may be, and again, I'm reminding you, I'm painting with a broad brush. When I talk about Wernicke's aphasia, not every person presents exactly the same, right? Because we are all our own unique butterfly. Our brains are structured similarly, but there are individual differences. So when we talk about aphasias, just to take you back to earlier episodes, it's a constellation of characteristics or symptoms or things you see and hear. And that's kind of how we group people into an aphasia category. No, you don't have to know exactly the aphasia category someone is in, but if you understand fluent versus non-fluent, you'll have a much better understanding of what that person could be going through and how they present when you interact with them. So we're talking about fluent aphasia, specifically of Wernicke's aphasia in this example. So if you're speaking to someone and they have fluent speech, like they're speaking a foreign language, but they don't realize their message is not landing, they don't realize that you don't understand, some of them may just keep on talking. I remember early in my career, I had this lovely, lovely woman, and I could look at her and I say, "Do you eat sticks?" And she's like, "Oh, yes, yes, I do." And then I say, "Do you like rocks in soup?" "Oh, delicious. That is so good. I la, 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 la," whatever it is she went on to say. So in a way, she got the intonation, like she knew I was asking a question. So she was responding with an answer. On the first example, I did not have any confidence that she actually knew what I was asking her. And on the second example, when she responded delicious to the question of, "Do you like rocks in soup?" she must have gotten part of the question, right? Because then she responded delicious, which seems appropriate, but then the rest of the response didn't make any sense. So if you're speaking to someone who has fluent aphasia and you're getting this kind of a response, you're like, "What? What do I do with that?" Okay, so let's move on. So with a person who has fluent aphasia, just as a little tangent, little side note here, in treatment with a speech pathologist, we want to focus on several areas first. We've got to work on comprehension. If they tend to talk a lot, then we have to get them to be quiet, like shh. So, and I say that very specifically because if you're talking, you can't be listening. So if someone with Wernicke's aphasia is a big talker, we have to get them to stop talking first so then we can work on their comprehension. from there, we have to work on things like getting them to read the face and the body language of who they're talking to know if they're making sense or not. It's a pretty complicated therapy model, and it's just so important, first and foremost, for you who might be interacting with this person to understand a little bit about the aphasia first, and then we can get into strategies. So if there's misunderstandings, think about if this is your spouse who has Wernicke's aphasia and you are not normally the one who takes care of the bills or managing the finances or working with a financial advisor, but you feel like you need to ask him a question so that you can kind of like start taking over these jobs and those kinds of things. Imagine if you're feeling stress, getting an answer for what you need to resolve from the spouse who has Wernicke's aphasia, and you're not getting the answers you need, whether that's because they don't understand it or they can't express it to you. There can be a lot of emotions there, and it's super easy to have a reaction to it, right? As soon as we allow emotions to take hold, we can react, and then that shuts down our logical, our thinking part of the brain, and now we're in the reptile side of our brain. Does that make sense? So we have to first understand that we can't let emotions take over because we have to be thinking. So misinterpretation of speech, taking words at face value. If you don't understand that your person who has Wernicke's aphasia doesn't know that they're not making sense, you may take the words and you may add those together and jump to your own conclusion. That, can you see how that can lead to misunderstandings, to frustration, to emotional reaction? Because some of the words may be coming out that don't make any sense. They might be irrelevant. And emotions escalate situations, right? Do not jump to conclusions when you're communicating with a person with Wernicke's aphasia. You have to take all of them into consideration, because what you may find is even though they don't understand the words themselves, they might be perceiving your intent behind the question, that you're trying to get information. So therefore they are trying to give you an answer, but their words just don't make sense. You have to understand, you being the listener, that is, that maybe on a subconscious level, they are processing what you're trying to ask, but they can't give you the answer back because their words don't work. So when you have emotional strain, you can also have relationship strain. I encourage you, no matter the kind of aphasia or Parkinson's or primary progressive aphasia your person may have, do not let this break your relationship. Aphasia is hard. Just general communication is hard, right? Don't let it ruin your relationship. Don't allow it to put that additional strain there, because you might stop, you the listener talking to the person with aphasia, you might stop trying to reach out, trying to connect. And over time, that is very isolating for both you and the person with aphasia. Isolation is horrid. I don't have a better word to tell you. Because the person with aphasia, whether they can talk or not, whether you can perceive they understand or not, on some level they do. They know if you're not interacting with them. So how do we prevent misunderstandings? Education and awareness. The number one reason I started this podcast nearly 2 years ago is because I feel the need to educate. When someone has had a stroke and they're in the hospital, it's all about survival, right? It's about making sure the body systems are working. It's about getting very basic communication set up, you know, getting immediate survival needs taken care of, eating and toileting and sleeping and making sure your heart rate is under control, whatever the case may be, right? So when you're first in the hospital, you are just trying to survive. But think about it 6 months, a year later, when I think of it as the dust settling, and many of my families have explained it the same way. You are in fight or flight mode in that first year. Maybe it's even the first 2 years after stroke. And you are emotional and reactive. But then what after that? About communication. You have to understand, and maybe you, the spouse, care partner, are now in a better place where you're not quite as emotionally reactive, that you can learn much more about aphasia, understand the kind of what it's like being in the shoes of the person with aphasia, what they understand, what they don't understand, what helps them communicate, what doesn't help them communicate. So the purpose of this podcast is education and awareness, first and foremost. Another way to work on preventing misunderstandings, knowing what some clarification strategies are, whether it's repeating back what you heard. So they say, I want some gobbledygook. You, the listener, say, I heard you say, you want some gobbledygook. And then you pause, wait, let them process that. See if they even perceived some of your words. And then you can take the next steps after that. Seeing a professional, working with a speech pathologist who understands aphasia, even if you're 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years after a stroke, there is always something new to learn. I highly encourage you, listen to podcasts, seek out YouTube videos, find a speech pathologist who works with chronic aphasia so you can keep learning and understanding. Because whether you believe it or not, your person with aphasia is still making progress, even years after they've had a stroke, if that's what caused their aphasia. There was always room for improvement. Learning a new task, a new hobby, all of this contributes to neuroplasticity. The brain keeps growing. It keeps evolving. It keeps making new connections. So professional support, professional information from someone in the know can really help you moving forward prevent misunderstandings. And then finally, creating supportive environments. Understanding that if you're going to have a conversation with your person with aphasia, whether it doesn't matter if it's fluent, non-fluent, or whatever, having a quiet environment, making eye contact, connecting with that person before you talk goes a long way to helping prevent misunderstandings. So let's do a little shift from fluent aphasia to non-fluent aphasia. Non-fluent aphasia, one of the primary ones, the name you'll hear is called Broca's aphasia. So non-fluent aphasia is right at the backside of the frontal lobe. This is the frontal lobe. You have a left side. For those of you just listening, you don't see my gestures. You have the left side of your frontal lobe. You have the right side of your frontal lobe. So call this the frontal lobe right here. Okay, this kind of chunk. It's at the back side. And often you will hear the term Broca's aphasia. So let's talk about how Broca's aphasia presents. This is a non-fluent aphasia because Broca's area is near the motor strip. Think of motor and muscles, right? Both M words. So it's near the motor strip. And that motor strip controls all of your muscles. Everything from raising your elbow to stamping your foot to snapping your fingers to smiling is controlled in that motor strip. Broca's aphasia is non-fluent, so speech can be halting. There may not be speech at all, or there could be speech that is just single words, or speech that uses nonsense syllables but has lots of intonation behind it. There's a great, just like there can be a great variety of how Wernicke's presents itself in fluent aphasia. Same thing for Broca's and non-fluent. There is a whole spectrum of abilities and disabilities that come along with that diagnosis. So the person with Broca's aphasia, their comprehension tends to be better than their expression. Again, just in general, this is a broad brush. There can be an additional complexity to Broca's. We can have apraxia, which is a motor speech disorder that even if they know what they want to say, there's a disconnect. Like think of it going from their brain, you know, where their thoughts and words are generated. Think of it as being unplugged to their mouth. So even though they know what they might want to say, might have the words, they can't control the muscles of their mouth to say the words. So think about the person that has good comprehension, but they can't get the words out. And now they have apraxia, which could also affect gestures, their ability to write, as well as their ability to speak. So you get a sense of what this complexity, you know, what you could be up against. So let me give you some examples of Broca's aphasia. So if I were to ask the question, do you cut grass with an axe? I could get a response like, yes, no, 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 gentle, but grass, never, never did that. That could be one example of a Broca's. I could ask a question, tell me about reading. And they might respond, reading? You notes is bothers me much. Can you see how that kind of like telegraphic speech, there's not a lot of little words in there, but you may not also be getting a full message. It's a little different coming out because it's halting, can be word finding problems. There's just so much complexity to non-fluent Broca's aphasia. It's hard to give you an example. So I want to give you an example of one of my clients. He is really good at understanding daily life. He knows what's going on around him. He has activities he loves to do. It's just him and his wife in the house. He's about 4 years since his stroke, but he cannot say words. He can say these kind of repetitive syllables with great intonation. So you can tell if he's happy or sad or irritated. And plus, you can read his body language really well. You know if he's miffed at you. You know if he's getting frustrated because he can't tell you something. But he cannot verbally get out words. It takes extreme effort, and we've never been able to successfully get words to come out. So we have to use alternative ways for him to communicate. But you can tell that he knows what's going on. We know he understands what is being said around him for good daily conversation, for watching movies. But something super complex, he might get kind of lost in the weeds in that understanding. He also has the challenge of what's called limb apraxia. Just like I talked about, like a motor speech, the apraxia of the mouth, where they have the thought and the words, but they can't get their mouth to do it. Well, he also can't get his hand to do gestures. His gestures are very nonspecific. If he points, it could mean something just outside the window. It could mean something at the neighbor's house, or it can mean something across town. We don't know. So his spouse then has to try and understand what is the context, what immediately preceded him pointing out the window. And based on that context, then she starts asking questions. She has to ask a lot of yes-no questions to try and narrow it down, to try and get more of the context to help him communicate whatever it is that's on his mind. Luckily, he's good with his phone. He can look up in contacts on his phone and show her the name of who we might be thinking of. Or he can even pull up Google Maps, right? And point to the map in the town if he's talking about somebody in the neighborhood or it's a business across town, whatever the case may be. So he does have some skills, some ways of communicating, but it's not consistent and it's not always happening. Does that make sense? So he doesn't always realize that what he's trying to convey, that the message is not landing, or if he does understand it, he doesn't know how to bridge that gap of what he's trying to say so that his wife understands it. So that's just one example of a client with non-fluent, Broca's aphasia with apraxia. They can have limited verbal expression. There can be lots of misinterpretation of effortful speech. They might have this grumpy, angry, upset look on their face, and you, the listener, might interpret what they're trying to convey, that grumpiness, that frustration, or maybe it's just their reaction, reacting internally to the struggle that they have trying to get their message out, right? We don't know if they are expressing to you that they're frustrated with you, the listener, or are they just frustrated with what's going on inside their own mind? And you can see, being a listener, not knowing which that is, how you could have misunderstandings. And then there's the emotional repercussions. If you, the listener, react in an emotional way to that face, because you remember, you may not know, is it them expressing their frustration or is it them internally reacting to the struggle? You see how this can happen. So let's talk about strategies for prevention and improving understanding. You have to know your person's aphasia, not only if you're the spouse, but you need to understand your person with aphasia's aphasia so you can explain it to other people so that the adult children, the grandchildren, don't react or misunderstand what grandpa is trying to say. When grandpa shows his frustration, the grandkid needs to know it's not because grandpa's frustrated with the kid necessarily, maybe it is, but it might not be. They need to understand that grandpa has internal frustration. Does that make sense? That's why we have to educate. There may be systems we can use, augmentative communication methods. Augment means to supplement, to help, to give another way. Maybe there's a communication book with pictures in it. Maybe it's like my client where I gave you his example where he could look at Google Maps when it has to do with locations. Or maybe if he's referring to somebody that's in his phone in his contacts, you might have to give him the prompt of, Grandpa, show me who you're talking about. Always get clarification and verification. If you, the listener, are perceiving that they are frustrated, you might ask a clarifying question. Are you frustrated with me, or are you frustrated with what you're thinking? Ask, connect, acknowledge also. You see frustration? Don't say it's okay. Please don't say it's okay because it sucks. It's not okay. But you can still show empathy to the person that's trying to communicate, hand on the shoulder, grabbing their hand, just waiting and giving them some space. Let them know that you're waiting, that you're patient, and that you are acknowledging their frustration. You're going to get far more frustration coming through from a person who has non-fluent aphasia than you are for a person with fluent aphasia. Compare and contrast. Fluent versus non-fluent. Fluent Wernicke's aphasia. Normal sounding speech, but can lack content and they can have trouble comprehending. Non-fluent aphasia, better with the comprehension, but they might have that disconnect between their thoughts and their mouth. And they may have also difficulty showing gestures, pointing to things, because they also have limapraxia. If there's a misunderstanding, first acknowledge it. Don't say it's okay. Give them space, give a pause, show them that you understand there's a frustration and that you're going to work to fix it. So misunderstandings often crop up or become worse when the listener gets reactive or they show impatience or they're rushing around. When you're interacting with someone with aphasia, you have to take a chill pill. You've got to slow down. You've got to pause. Give space. I'm repeating myself over and over because I can't tell you how important it is. When there's apraxia on top of a non-fluent aphasia, it's even more difficult to communicate because they know, they often know what they want to say. So while both fluent and non-fluent aphasia involve their own sets of communication challenges, misunderstandings can differ. As we wrap up today's episode, I highly encourage you, think about the person you know with aphasia. Are they fluent? Are they non-fluent? Give a few minutes to reflect about what can they do to communicate and what breaks down. Try and understand, put yourself in their shoes to see what you might think their understanding of how they communicate is. Does this make sense? I really, really want you to put yourself in their shoes. I've used this example before on other episodes. Have you ever woken up from a dream and you want to tell somebody about it because either it was something good or something bad or something confusing, but you want to share it with the other person? But you know the nature of dreams. It's not like a movie where it's fluid and everything makes sense. Sometimes you have bits and pieces and your brain works really hard to try and pull those pieces together. And you think, well, that kind of doesn't make sense. That can be what it's like living with aphasia. So I encourage you to understand the nature of your person's aphasia. If you don't know, get with a speech pathologist. Schedule a consult with someone. If you don't have insurance coverage, pay for a couple of sessions just to try and get a better sense of who your person is. Listen to podcasts. Look up things on the internet. Find YouTube videos. Understand where your person is, non-fluent, fluent. Try and get their perspective. What must it be like for them living in their head? What kind of awareness do they have going on? Or do they not have awareness? That's your first step. Misunderstandings is the nature of communication, right? Sometimes it works really great, and this is without aphasia, I'm saying. Sometimes it works really great and sometimes it breaks down. You add aphasia to the mix and you've got a whole other level of complexity. So, lots to process, right? I hope you are learning more about fluent and non-fluent aphasia. Solve misunderstandings. And it's also important to be resilient. What is resilience? Resilience is like being a rubber band. You might get stretched. You might be frustrated. You might have problems and you think you're at the point where you're going to break. Resilience is where you stop, breathe. You let that rubber band snap back into its original position. Find a way to get centered, get some perspective, get some objectivity. But resilience may not be natural for you. So what can I do to help you build your resilience? Well, I have a resource for you. I pulled this resource together called the 10 Ways to Build Resilience Checklist. And this is free for you. If you are curious about resilience and are you resilient? What do you put in? What practices do you have that allows you that when you get stretched to the limit, how do you bounce back? Check out this resource. You can get this resource from my website, dolifespeechpathology.com/build, B-U-I-L-D. When you go to my homepage, it's down at the bottom of the homepage. You can download it from there or just use the URL dolifespeechpathology.com/build and get your own copy. I would love to hear your feedback about this and where you think you are resilient and where you think you have room to grow. Get your download today. So until next time, we are here at Life Speech Pathology and the Listen for Life Aphasia podcast. We are trying to uncomplicate aphasia for you. If you have questions, do not hesitate to reach out and get connected. We're here for you. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Listen for Life podcast. We hope you feel empowered and supported. Head over to listenforlifepodcast.com to see the show notes with links and information from today's episode. Do you have a topic, a resource to share, or a guest recommendation? Inquiring minds want to know. Let us know in the comments section. Wishing you a fabulous week.